A lot of these trials are randomized. You'll see eligibility on the left, the kind of patients who went in the trial. In general, these are just CLL patients. Some of the trials have age designation, and then the patients get randomized, and they have to agree to be randomized to two different treatments. And incidentally, that note from your patient, he mentions how proud he was that he participated in that initial study and that he contributed, and now he's kind of getting it back. But you can imagine, Robin, trying to put a patient on this study, or maybe you put patients on this study, doing randomization between a BTK inhibitor and an oral therapy that's well tolerated, an FCR, very difficult chemotherapy. How do patients respond, Robin, when you present trials where they're going to be randomized between two different alternatives?
Well, it kind of depends on where they come. You've got some people who are very trusting, and you've got some people who think, okay, I want to go on this arm. But you have to educate them. It's really important. We don't really know which is better. And so that's why we're asking if you'd be interested in participating to help us learn that. So we just kind of walk through it with them and tell them the pros and cons of each one and the side effects and how we'll deal with them.
And Jeff, we have sometimes, I think people think the harsher the therapy, the more likely it is to be beneficial. But these trials that we're about to show are really stunning in that most of them are looking at oral agents, primarily well tolerated compared to chemotherapy. In this case, very difficult chemotherapy. Jeff, what do people go through when they get FCR, not used very much? And the amazing thing here is patients' FCR is actually the lower curve. So they didn't do as well as people on a BTK inhibitor. Jeff, any comments?
You know, FCR, there was a luminary in the field who a number of years ago was asked, what are your top three regimens in CLL? And to which the answer was FCR, FCR, and FCR. And it really held the commanding heights from roughly the original publication of the MD Anderson data around the year 2001, 2002, up until recently. And it was quickly recognized that the patients at MD Anderson who are age 57, median age in that study, could tolerate this. But when it was exported to the community, boy, a lot of patients really suffered through FCR, invasive fungal infections, lingering cytopenias. I had a patient who I inherited who had received 50 units of blood after FCR from just marrow suppression. These were hard, hard regimens in the more typical patient population that we see in community practice. It can be done. It can be done almost exclusively in younger individuals, less than age 65, with the most favorable molecular characteristics. But FCR in my practice is probably in the mid-single digit range right now. And I think there's thought leaders who might think that that's too high.
And, you know, there is a one, you know, when we talked about markers, and we mentioned the IGVH or IGHV mutation, and there was the thought that patients who had mutated disease would do better. Those are the ones who often got FCR. But you can see on the left side, even those patients, there's not much difference between the two, and certainly a lot easier to take ibrutinib. Other chemotherapy regimens, including bendamustine, you saw the same thing. Novel agents, people do better with BTK inhibitors. And we were talking about Jeff's role with the acalabrutinib, another BTK inhibitor, similar randomized trials there. Patients doing much, much better than with chemotherapy, both with or without an anti-CD20. What about venetoclax, Brad? This was a trial that really changed practice very much. Can you talk a little bit about what they looked at there?
Sure. So the really unique thing about this particular trial is the investigators chose to administer a fixed duration of venetoclax. So the venetoclax is given for 12 months. And then it stops. The obinutuzumab is given for 6 months during the venetoclax exposure. The logic here is that venetoclax has a higher CR rate, complete remission rate, than BTK inhibitors. It's more likely to produce an MRD negative remission. So in general, the remissions are deeper with venetoclax than they are with BTK inhibitors. And so there's really a desire amongst a lot of investigators for time-limited novel agent therapy. And so the thinking is we have this agent that induces deep high-quality remissions. Let's try a time-limited approach. So what you can see on these curves here is that 12 months of venetoclax combined with obinutuzumab performed much better than chlorambucil obinutuzumab in this patient population. So when the venetoclax obinutuzumab regimen became available last year, we suddenly had this very attractive, highly efficacious, time-limited option for our patients.
And of course, as is often the case in oncology, new therapies come out, but they're not always necessarily compared, at least right away. So you see two very effective strategies, BTK, venetoclax, but they haven't directly been compared. So you have to use sort of the art of oncology to figure out what to do. And Jeff, Brad referred to MRD, minimal residual disease, and that's being looked at in a variety of cancers. Myeloma is another example. What about MRD and CLL? How useful is it? And what did they see here in the venetoclax study?
Yeah, so MRD is just a useful measurement of how deep the response is. The presumption is that within an individual patient, the more CLL you eradicate, the longer their remission is going to last. And MRD, there are several ways of testing for it. The most commonly used and most readily available is flow cytometry, which can generally identify about 1 out of 10,000 cells in the peripheral blood or in the marrow if it's tested on the marrow. You can do it by PCR as well and get to probably 10 to the negative sixth, but that's more utilized in research studies for right now. What's available on a commercial level is the flow cytometry approach. And if you get to the end of therapy, oftentimes after CD20-based therapy, you need to wait a number of months to test this because the CD20 can potentially interfere with the measurement. But MRD then allows you to stratify how deep the response was. You know, one of the things that we've observed is that patients can be MRD negative and still have some residual lymph nodes. And those patients who are MRD negative, even if they have some residual lymphadenopathy, do better than those who are MRD positive. I think as you stretch out a lymph node, it doesn't always snap back to its normal size following the conclusion of therapy. That doesn't mean it's necessarily involved with the disease. But it's sort of a means by which I might say that CT scans can be a little bit misleading. What might be perceived as a partial response when you look at this with minimal residual disease, you may have more confidence that it's a deeper response. And in that particular study, in the peripheral blood, I think it was roughly about 3/4 of patients were MRD negative in the blood and about half of patients were MRD negative in the marrow. Those are very good responses and very comparable to what we see with FCR, for instance. So it's one way we can also kind of do a little bit of that art of oncology, which is the cross-trial comparisons and so forth. But as of right now, we can't use it to tell us when to continue therapy or to stop therapy. I think that's something we would like to see, but we're just not there yet.